Welcome to Local Exposure, a podcast about music and the greater Cincinnati scene. I'm Jim Nolan.
Adam, this is the guy down the street. I don't know if you remember me. I'm calling you from an alien vessel. I've just been abducted.
I don't think it's hyperbole to say that Mad Anthony is the hardest working band in greater Cincinnati. When you combine a regular schedule of touring, both in the U.S. and internationally, with a massive recording project that involves releasing one song every week for a year, plus some elaborate video production, the three members of this band give their heart and soul into producing some great hard-hitting music. The first volume of Mad Anthology is currently available, and volume 2 should be coming out very soon. Here to tell me more about the project, the music, and how they balance all of that with their ever-present day jobs are Mad Anthony, Mark Sherlock, Ringo Jones, and Adam Flagg. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Marty blushing.
Let's get a little history. How long have you guys been together as a band?
So Adam and I have been playing together for a decade now. 10 years, actually, this fall. And then Mark joined the fold about 3 years after that. So the three of us, and what I really consider Mad Anthony, the three of us, for 7 years.
I don't want to bring up too many harsh memories, but you guys did go through some pretty serious times recently with a bad accident on tour. You want to talk about that just a little bit? And I know, Mark, you probably suffered the worst of it.
Yeah, it was quite an experience, what I remember of it. That's the actual accident itself, I have no memory of whatsoever. I woke up in a hospital, and Adam was there, and they had me in a weird machine. But in the long run, I only did three or four months with a neck brace on. And then I was good to get back to work and everything. So
what I remember is the music community of Cincinnati coming together. There was a fundraiser and just everyone throwing all kinds of positive energy your way and just lots of support from the local music family.
Yeah, it was kind of a shock to us. Like, we knew we had a lot of friends in the Cincinnati area, and there was other areas too. I think Toronto, Lexington, Indianapolis all had some kind of, you know, fun show to help us, you know, pay off some of the debt from the accident. But it was one of those situations where a lot of people that we hadn't talked to in years or that we didn't even know thought of us that way came out and really gave us a lot of love and support, and it kind of overwhelmed us. I think we had to take a step back and kind of realize our role in the music community, because at that point we were very much about, we're doing this for us, we're doing this to make a living, we're doing this to build our reputation. And once that happened, it kind of refocused us on what we wanted to do as a band, what we wanted to accomplish.
And this project that you guys undertook, 52 songs, a song a week for a year. How and why?
How, I'm still figuring out. Why, I'm not sure. Well, I think why we wanted to do it was because at that phase, we had released a record, Sang for Days, we had released another EP and two full lengths before that. We were four releases in the kind of like standard cycle that you do, where you make a record and then you tour and then you write and then you make a record. And then we're kind of in that cycle. We've been doing that for a few years, and we were just kind of in the stride of writing, where we were just writing a ton and we had a backlog of songs. And Sang for Days had kind of been out long enough for us to put out a new release. And so we were all kind of trying to figure out what we wanted to do as far as, you know, put out a new record, put out another EP, you know. So we're kind of not excited about just putting out a record. We wanted to do something different, and we wanted to keep writing the way we were writing, also finish the songs we had been kind of backlogged. Once we kind of figured out what we wanted to do, we realized the opportunity was not just to make a bunch of songs that we had and kind of different genres, but we could include all the people that we've met over the years of touring and kind of like cross-promote and kind of include our friends from different bands and different cities.
And that's quite a list. I was looking at some of the bands that you have listed among your partners in this project. You have local bands like The Mitchells, Alone at 3 a.m., Margaret Darling, Valley of the Sun, The Sundresses, Ohio Knife, John Curleaf and the Afghan Whigs, State Song. But you also have When Particles Collide, who's a great band from Maine, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And Super Drag, they're from...
Well, now they're out of Nashville.
Okay.
Originally, they were from Knoxville.
But, I mean, just a huge collaboration. How many of these songs did you have sort of prepared and ready to go before you decided, hey, we're going to do this 52-song project? Or how many of them were created after the project started and you're like, oh, it's the end of the week. We need to throw a song out.
There was a good mix, really. Yeah. Before we actually launched the campaign, we probably had 13 songs finished in the can, like ready to release. And then we had another probably 13 songs that were somewhere in the process. They either needed vocals or they needed, you know, an instrument or just some finishing touches. And then the rest of it, so we had, let's say, half in queue. And then the rest was, all right, we need to write these within the next year. And we wanted to have some availability so that we could bring in collaborators earlier rather than, hey, we wrote this song. Why don't you throw your voice on it? We wanted to be like, hey, we have this idea for a song. Can you help us flesh the rest of it out? A lot of it was prepared ahead of time, but then there was moments where it was Wednesday night and we're looking at each other like, what are we going to do this week? Even then, like coordinating, okay, this person's coming to town. Let's try and release the When Particles Collide song when we play with them that week and kind of lining things up. So some things were months ahead and other things were minutes ahead.
Well, then production-wise, were they all done in studio? Were they done on a computer or a mix? How was the production on this project?
Yeah, that was a mix also. So that was one of the other benefits of just meeting these bands, just being able to tour and meet all these people. We also met people in different studios. A lot of the studios were in Cincinnati. So there was Mike Montgomery at Candyland, Mike Ingram.
John Curley. Steve Wethington.
Steve Wethington at Ultra Suede. And your house.
A lot of stuff at my house.
Ringo's dining room.
Gotcha. I also worked with Shane Chaney.
Shane Chaney, who's a fellow Fratree label mate. And then we got to work with a guy named Mike Purcell in Nashville, who we met through a band called Hurst to Laugh, who's in the project with us. And then up in Ontario, one of our friends, one of the guys from the Shanks.
Yeah, and sometimes also, it would be, you know, we'd go to a studio and we'd invite our friends into the studio. Other times we'd be doing cutting vocals or instruments in their living room. I remember we were in Boston with a friend of ours and we're like, hey, we need bass on this. And he just got out of bed. He's in his boxers, you know, sitting on the couch playing bass to this track that would later become Tell Me You Love Me. But at the time, I was like, hey, we need bass. You play bass. Come on, let's do this thing.
So, just as boxers, like, bowl of cereal on the table.
Yeah.
Well, I want to listen to a song from this project.
We can edit it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't know. Because I really want to go with Rocket to the Sun, but there's a lot of F-bombs
in
that song. Yeah,
you can't use, that's like the one, I think we have more curse words in that song than the rest of the catalog.
First two lines.
Yeah.
How about we do Wookiee Slows It Down?
All right. Okay.
One of the great things about that song, Wookiee Slows It Down, and Rocket to the Sun, are the videos. The production, the animation on those is fantastic. Who is responsible for that?
So on Rocket to the Sun, so those that don't know, I'm a faculty staff role at Miami University. And through that, I work in the media production program. And I've just met a lot of great creative students. And one of those students happened to be a young animator named Kyle Newton. So he goes by Fig Newton. And he had done the opening credits for a student production. And I was like, wow, those look fantastic. I'd love to do a video with you. So I just messaged him. He had graduated. And I messaged him, like, here's an idea we have for a song. Would you be interested in working together? And we got together. He did it all pretty much on his own. You know, we said, this is kind of the context of the song. Do what you do. And he came back and he said, here's what I've got. And we spent some notes back and forth. And then that was born. Whereas Wookiee and Fall Apart were a high school friend of mine. I was on the academic quiz team at Turpin High School. And a fellow nerd, Tom Berline, we graduated a couple years apart, but he ended up, you know, going off and becoming an animator himself. And he does stuff for Cartoon Network, Hanna-Barbera, everything. And it just happened to be, you know, we reconnected it through music. And I said, hey, let's do a video. And he was totally down. So
when the video for Fall Apart is also another one that stands up my mind as being fantastic. And you've kind of adapted these characters into your own identities. I know on social media you have, I guess you call it the main character from the Fall Apart video kind of representing you. So you've kind of taken on almost like a gorilla's kind of identity from these videos. You mentioned being a faculty member. I was going to ask all of you, because this is something that I don't do often with bands, and I probably should, is ask you about your day jobs. What do you do when you're not Matt Anthony?
I'm a shipping supervisor at an Amazon-like warehouse setting, so I basically just deal with paperwork and computers.
Yeah, Mark. Actually, Mark and I used to work together. I was, if you believe it or not, I was Mark's boss. I hired Mark.
Getting time off for tour was real easy.
Yeah, we'd have to leave together for tour. But that was a few years ago, and now I work. I do construction for my brother-in-law. They own a commercial construction company. So right now we're working on an elementary school where my niece and nephew go to. So I see them sometimes at school, which is nice.
That was basically the point of my question, is asking how do you balance those jobs with touring, recording, performing, and everything else that is required for your Matt Anthony responsibilities.
You just don't sleep, man.
Yeah, we yawn a lot. I would always take jobs that I could leave easily, or you know, it would always kind of be understood at the beginning that I would have to take time off, a lot of time off. So,
but they know that up front.
They know it up front, yeah. And then they slowly are like, "All right, we didn't realize you actually meant it this much."
Another question I want to ask you about: you mentioned Freytree Records, your relationship with that label. You've been with Freytree for quite a while now. How has being part of Freytree helped Matt Anthony?
Well, initially we fell in love with Freytree because Jerry sent out this, it was a mix CD.
A compilation.
Yeah, it was a compilation of bands that he was working with or was planning to work with. And the literature that he sent with it, the press release, was amazing. It was talking about, you know, this is about building a music community. It's about bands supporting other bands and all these things. And that drew me in. So I was like, I want to be part of this community. And it started out just, we just went to shows and we got to know all the other guys and gals that play on Freytree label bands. And then after a while, they kind of brought us in. You know, we had passed the initiation phase and we were part of that group. And it just was friendship, you know, and it still feels that way. We still regularly get to go out and see those bands play. I actually just saw Jerry last night. So it's just one of those things where I think it's a lot of it's mutual respect. But early on, we were kind of the little brothers. We were the runts, and they kind of showed us the way.
Well, I guess I have to point out, Freytree Records is an independent record label run by Jerry Durr in Norwood, basically run out of his bedroom. And he just does it for the love of the music and, for the, like you said, to build a music community.
Yeah, and in that sense, he's been very successful. Like, you know, I don't think he ever thought he was going to make millions of dollars doing this, and he hasn't.
Right.
You know? So, but he has really, like, Jerry is the mayor in my world of the Cincinnati music scene. So a lot of respect for that guy and what he's done for Cincinnati.
Another thing I want to talk to you about, and again, you touched on it just a little bit earlier when we were talking about the accident that you had on your tour, is the relationship that you as a band have in the Cincinnati community. I think there's a lot of bands who get a reputation as, oh, these are, you know, these guys are punks or these guys are really hard to deal with. But I would say, pretty much everyone I've asked, when you say Matt Anthony, they say they're just a great bunch of guys.
We pay them. We pay a lot of people. I mean, we all three get along very naturally, and we just are, like, happy to do what we do. And I think that we meet a lot of people that are doing what, you know, make them happy, and it's just kind of a reciprocal positive energy. So, and also, like, we, you know, we treat people how we want to be treated, and hopefully we aren't rude or, you know, dismissive to anybody. If it is, it's not intentional. I think we just try to, like, we enjoy what we're doing, and we try to, like, project that as much as we can.
Well, I think there's, like, a code, a band code. And it's like things like watching the other band play, showing up on time. And it's like those little things that veteran bands, bands that we kind of grew up with, the Freight Tree bands, kind of taught us early on. And we've kind of brought that into our aesthetic. It's like we're here to do a job, but we're also here to have fun. And we're not going to let something get in the way of that. So it's first order of business is we're here to support the other bands. We're here to have a good time. We're here to put together a good show. And I think bands, for lack of a better word, they respect that. And we, that's what we go for, because we respect them.
I want to talk a little bit about what's next for Matt Anthony. I know basically by the time that this podcast will air, you guys will already have been in Canada as another part of a tour, sort of a long weekend tour.
We love going to Canada. We've been going for a couple of years now, and we made some good friends up there, which makes it really easy to keep going back, like places to live basically while you're there. And we're kind of building more of a following. And that's always fun to find a new place and then try to succeed at building a following in the area. But yeah, there's a couple of places that are like being at home there. And then every now and again, we get to try something new.
I want to talk a little bit about the Mad Anthology project. You have the first one out. First, how did you select which tracks make it to the album?
One night, instead of having rehearsal, we just said, all right, we got to figure this out. So we sat down with, you know, the big full list of 52 songs, and we all went around the room and picked our favorites, and I think that narrowed it down to like 32. And then from there we said, okay, of these, which songs kind of fit together? Which ones feel like an album rather than, hey, here's Greatest Hits Volume 1, here's Greatest Hits Volume 2. It's more, this is an album that has a lot of different collaborators, a lot of different feels on it, and we want it to feel like an album. We want it to kind of flow from the intro to the very end, and we feel like we did a really good job accomplishing that, especially on Volume 1 of like, here's the mood we want to put you in. We want to take you for a roller coaster ride.
When does Volume 2 come out?
We haven't set the release date yet, but it'll be sometime this winter. We've got a lot of collaborators who are excited to have their song out on vinyl, so we got to get it out soon.
And similar, about 11 tracks or so?
Yep, 11 tracks again. And going forward, depending on the success of these two, we may continue to do more volumes. We know we want to do more songs, so whether or not they get pressed in a physical medium, we'll see.
Well, Ringo, Mark, Adam, I really appreciate you guys taking the time to stop by and speak to me about your band and what's going on.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Take us out. I want you to pick what song we listen to on the way out.
You want to do Keep a Light On?
Yeah, that's always a good one. So this one goes out to our friends, the Bygods. They were the collaborators on this one, and they have an awesome new album, too. So check out the Bygods.
They're from Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
So this is Keep a Light On by Matt Anthony. For links to more information about Matt Anthony and their Matt Anthology project, please visit wvxu.org/lx. Local Exposure is a production of 91.7 WVXU and Cincinnati Public Radio. This interview was recorded by Dave Shermer and produced by me, Jim Nolan. Next time.